One thing that I'm not particularly involved in is horse racing. But apparently, there's actually something, I didn't really know this until I was working on this a while ago. There's this thing called blinkers, or sometimes they're called blinders. It depends on where you are as to exactly what's going on. So if you're ever going along and you see racehorsing going on, and you see these things that are around the eyes, they wear these things that draw their focus forwards. One of the benefits that horses have that we don't have is they do have eyes on the sides of their head, so they actually have a wider range of view than we do. It's just not as good as human eyesight, because actually having two eyes close together, you get more crossover. And so your brain actually is able to trigger and make sure that what you're seeing is more accurate. Horses have a wider view. What that also means is it's really easy for them to get, you know, skittish, or to get distracted, or to have something that's going on in their peripheral vision draw their attention. Maybe it's a horse that's beside them, or maybe it's something else that's going along, and it draws their attention away. So when they're doing horse racing, they put these blinkers on so that all the horse can see is what's ahead. All the horse can focus on is where it is going. It's not distracted by the things that are going on around it. I wonder what you're running towards. If you were to take stock at the moment and think about your life and where you currently sit, and I don't mean the chair that you're sitting in, to think about what it is that you're doing. What are you running towards? Maybe you're exploring faith and you're running towards getting to know, who is this God? Who is this Jesus? Or maybe you've been a part of faith for some time, and it's actually some goal that you've got, or something that Jesus has laid on your heart. Maybe it's your profession, or maybe it's family, or maybe it's something else. What are you running towards? What's your focus? What's your destination? What's that thing that's up ahead that's drawing your attention forwards? And then as you think about that, I'd also love you to think about what's distracting you. What are those things that are just popping up at just the wrong time? What are those things that it's taking your energy away? And maybe it's some good things. Maybe you've got some good things that are actually distractions. Sometimes it's easy to say no to the bad distractions, but it's the good distractions that can kick us off course, because they're good. Surely good is good, right? Like, surely if it's good, it's okay. What's distracting? We're starting a new series today, just a 4-week series looking at perseverance. And in particular, we're wanting to look at the book of Hebrews and what it says to us about finding encouragement in a challenging world. See, as much as the world today is very different to the world that Hebrews was written into, much of the challenges that the people in the church of Hebrews experienced, we experience today. They're different, they're nuanced, they're sort of in different ways. But we can learn a lot from what was being said to the church at that time and apply that in our life today. What does it mean to persevere? To press on? How can we find encouragement? How can we find the strength that we need to keep going as followers of Jesus in a complicated world? So let's dig in. I'd love you to turn with me to Hebrews chapter 12. And we're going to start off with a little bit of an overview to some degree today. So Hebrews chapter 12. And we're just looking at three verses. Three little verses that paint a really significant picture of how we can persevere and find the strength to keep going in our faith. So I'm just going to read through those three verses, and then we'll piece by piece work our way through it. Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great crowd of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. What's going on here? Why are these three verses so important? Well, the context of this is in verse 1. It says this: therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. If you were to go back one chapter and go back to chapter 11, the author of Hebrews gives a long rundown of all of the heroes of the faith from the Old Testament. Abel right back towards the beginning, into Enoch, into Noah, into Abraham, into Isaac, into Jacob, down to Joseph, and even Rahab the prostitute gets a mention. All of these people that had gone before them who had exhibited faith, that something about their life had required perseverance. Every one of those characters had some part of their story where things didn't go as they hoped they would. Every one of those heroes experienced something where the rosy picture of the future was rocked by something that challenged them. And so the author of Hebrews has gone through each of these people and expressed, and this is how they showed faith. 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 And so we come to Hebrews chapter 12 with that context in mind. And now the author of Hebrews turns their attention to the people that he's writing to and says, now that you recognize we've got all of these people that have gone before us, these are the shoulders that we build upon. He goes on to say this: let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. With all this in mind, with all of this history, with all this recognition of who has gone before us, let us now make sure that we throw off everything that hinders. You may recognize I'm not the most athletic person. It's certainly not my pastime. It's not my strength. But I know enough about racing to know a few things. And that's when you actually look at people who are fast. One of the things that they do, and it's getting less and less as the years progress. Not quite true. We'll come to that in a moment. But they wear as close and tight-filled outfit as they possibly can. They want to make sure they reduce any of the drag so that when they're running, their clothes aren't flapping around. Everything they've got is like skin tight. And it's as little as they can have to have, you know, some modesty while still being able to run really fast. And that's the picture that Paul is drawing on. Not quite the modern day one. Actually, to some degree, Paul is actually calling on the ancient Greeks. And you may not know this, but the ancient Greeks competed in the nude. They took an extra step. Not only did they just make sure the clothes were really tight, they just did away with the clothes completely. Who needs to have those pesky things there when you can just run that crazy? Okay, we're not going to quite go to that, and that's certainly not what I'm suggesting today, but it is that idea that the author of it, we don't actually know who wrote Hebrews. Paul was often historically attested, but it's not really likely that he wrote it. But what's going on here is they're saying everything that doesn't need to be there will just hinder you. So what are those distractions? What are those sins that are catching you at the moment? The author is encouraging you to actually take stock and consider what's holding you back. Where are you buying into things that are not helpful or fruitful for you right now? What clothes are flapping in the breeze that you can actually let go of because they're not going to help you? Throw it off. Do the hard work of removing the things that distract you. Even if those are good things, it may not be sin, because it's throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. Not everything that hinders you is sinful. not everything that holds you back is bad for you. But it's taking the time to recognize what's getting in the way right now. What's on my calendar that needs to not be on my calendar? What do I keep saying yes to that I need to say no to? How do I keep running the race that I'm meant to run and not let those things get into my field of view? Throw it off. Don't let it distract you. And then the author goes on to say, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. There's one thing about perseverance. You don't need perseverance for something that's easy. If something's easy, there's no sense of I've got to persevere to do this. If it's easy, you just do it. There's something about the way that the author is addressing this here in Hebrews that actually is recognizing most people's journeys are not easy. That actually the norm is not that everything is up to the right, that everything is rosy, that everything is fantastic. Actually, for many, if not most of us, our faith journeys are going to have lots of potential stumbles along the way. It's part of why the author has just alluded to all of these characters that have gone before, not because they had an easy life, but because in spite of their circumstances, they ran the race of faith. The only reason we need perseverance for faith is because it isn't going to be easy. It's not going to be what necessarily comes natural. It's not going to be this thing that you get up in the morning and go, I'm really glad that I get to do this today, because there are going to be days where that is just not how you feel. And so the author is wanting to give us some help. How do we do this? How do we live the life of faith? And there are some other ways we can do this that we'll be going into over the next couple of weeks. But there's a couple of things I want to draw your attention to here. So the first one is, it's not going to be easy. Some translations have the word endurance here. Let us run with endurance. This is not just your little 50-meter sprint. The life and journey of faith is much more like a marathon. And very few people can run a marathon without training, without taking time to wrestle with and to learn what it takes to do that. But the second thing that is alluded to here by the author is that there's an idea that there's this race marked out for us. Now, we have to be a little bit careful here, because you can take it too far. And you can get caught in that trap of going, I can't take another step until Jesus tells me exactly what that step needs to be. And then I can't take another step and tells me exactly what that step needs to be. It's not this idea that every single step that you will take has already been decided for you, and your job is to be like a computer program that just follows the steps. That is not the life that God has called us to. It's actually a little bit more like what racing is. Again, so if you know anything, 50, 100, 200 meter races, you've got a racetrack and you just run that track and you have your starting point and then you run on your lanes. Once you get beyond sort of the 2, 4, I think maybe even the 800 meters, you actually start to get it where, yes, you have a staggered start, but once you get around that first circle, the first half corner, everyone bunches together. And from that point on, there is no defined lane. You follow the race. There's still a race course to be followed, but exactly where you run is not defined. That's part of the idea of what we're being alluded to here in faith. It's not that every single step you will take has been defined and you've just got to find what's that one thing and I have to get it right. And if I get it wrong, I'm not in God's will. But it's as you run the race, there is a general sense of what's been mapped out, that God has some ideas around it. In fact, what I actually think this is meant to say to us, how this is meant to encourage us, is that we actually know that there is actually someone with us. There is someone who knows the race that we are called to run. That God actually does have some wisdom and some insight about what is good for you in this place at this time. And it's not that there's one right thing. you might have seven fantastic opportunities before you. And God's not sitting there going, you better pick that one. You better pick that one or else. But he does know what will help you. And he wants to encourage you and he wants to bring people into your life to help you discern for yourself what those things are. There is a race that is marked out for us. And there is going off track. There is a sense that you can miss the mark. But don't get caught in that trap of being so scared of following Jesus to do anything because you're waiting for every single step to be numbered. That is not what the New Testament speaks to. All right, we're on to verse 2 now. We're getting there. All right, the author now gives you a sense of to how. So if we're going to get rid of these things, if we're going to disentangle the distractions, if we're going to throw things aside that aren't going to help us, what instead do we do? What do we focus on? Where do we look? And the author says, fixing our eyes on Jesus. Yes, the Sunday school answer is correct here. The answer is Jesus. But how that looks is a little different. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of faith. When you are in a race, competitors fix their eyes on the finish line. When you watch them and they're getting down in the stocks and they're getting ready, at the start they might sort of look and see who they're up against, but they're not really interested in who's beside them. All that matters from that point forward is there's the finish line and I'm going to get there before anyone else does. They're focused and ready to run to that finish line. So part of what that means in faith is put your blinkers on. Find ways to get your focus on Jesus, on what he has for your life, on what he has called you to, on the people that he has put into your life to help direct you and to guide you and to sense his purpose for you. To let those distractions be cast aside. Another word that's used here is the word pioneer or author. Again, so the word that's translated here, it can mean either of these terms. It's this idea that Jesus made this path or Jesus walked this path first. At Easter time, we often skip over the fact that Jesus spent 3 years modeling what it meant to be a Christian, modeling what it meant to follow him. He didn't just come down on day one, die on the cross, on day two, be in the grave, on day three, rise again. He came and spent 3 years pioneering the path, modeling it, demonstrating, this is what it means, this is what it looks like, this is how you live for me, this is what my kingdom is like. This is how you can know that you're doing it. He is the pioneer. He is the author. Look to him. Listen to him. Let his words sink deep in your soul to direct you and guide you. And then there's this word here that says, and perfecter of our faith. And this is again where we can get caught unstuck because we go, see, there it is. I have to be perfect. That's not what this is saying. It is not saying you have to be perfect. It is saying that he is the perfecter. He is working in you. He is working through you. It is his job through his spirit to be refining you and drawing you towards more and more who he is making you to be. 2 Corinthians 3:18 says this, and we all, with unveiled faces, contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. It's this idea. So in the time of Israel, only the priest could go into the Holy of Holies and be in the presence of God, and they had a veil they'd put over themselves. But now we don't need the veil. We can be in the presence of God. And as we go about journeying through faith, God is increasingly making you more and more like him. He is the perfecter. He will challenge you. He will encourage you. He will help you to be more like him. to let him do that work. Don't get so caught up in that. Doesn't mean you can just, oh, I'm just going to sit here and I'm going to do nothing and God's just going to do it all. No, that's not what he's saying. But don't get caught up in thinking you're the one who has to get everything right. You've got to be perfect. That is not the message of grace. And then there's a really important part of this story. The author draws us to how Jesus did this. Because he endured the cross. He endured the cross, scorning its shame. I'm not going to talk to it today because today's Mother's Day and I don't want to go into the depths of the cross on that in that note. But if you've actually never done a deep dive into what a crucifixion is actually like, have a bit of a read one day and see what it actually does to the human body. That Jesus was able to endure the cross. Why? For the joy set before him. He had such certainty and hope of what was to come, that the most horrific of deaths was nothing. Now, it doesn't mean he didn't experience it. Very clearly, Jesus experienced it. He asked God to take it away from him. He prayed, and why have you forsaken me? He hung on the cross in pain. We know all of those things are true. But he was able to endure that because of the joy set before him. Have you spent some time really pressing into that joy? Letting the joy of God, the hope of eternity, the hope of life with him, have you let that so deeply infuse into your heart and soul that you can endure anything? Because that is how Jesus did it. For the joy set before him, he paid the price. And so we all too can recognize the joy that is set before us, the joy that is to come to bring us what we need to get through those things. Jesus has already marked out the race of faith for us. He's already written down and demonstrated and lived out what it means for us to get to the end and God to look at us and say, well done, my good and faithful servant. Be encouraged. Look at that joy. Look at what it is that God has done in and for us. So I want to go back to the first couple of questions. As we have pressed through and we come back to this, what are you running towards? Are you running towards Jesus? Or have you let the distractions draw you aside? Maybe you were running a really good race, but something came up and it's pulled you away. And you need to come back to God and repent and say, God, I am sorry. I got distracted by fame. I got distracted by money. I got distracted by insert distraction here. Whatever that distraction might be for you. Maybe you need to come back and recognize I'm not running the race that was marked out for me. Or maybe today you can feel really encouraged because you can actually say, you know what, actually, yeah, I am. All right, there's some challenges along the way and I still need to cast off some things that are hindering me. But no, I have definitely got that race. I've got Jesus in my sights. I am becoming more like him and you can be encouraged by this. But what are those things that are distracting you? What are those things that are popping up at just the wrong time, of course? What are those things that are taking your attention away from where it should be? And what's your role in casting those aside? Maybe not quite to the level of the Greeks, but, you know, what does it mean to get down just to a contemporary version of a runner who can run the race and win the prize, the joy that is set before us. And then in verse 3, we see this. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Consider him, consider Jesus, who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. This is one of the reasons why, as a church, we celebrate communion. Communion is meant to be a time where we are reminded of just what Jesus did for us. It's a time when we just pause and we take a little piece of bread and a little glass of juice and we let our mind be drawn back to what Jesus did on the cross. For the joy set before him, he endured. He persevered. He ran the race marked out for him. So we're going to take communion. And so in a moment, I'm going to invite you. You'll see that there is some bread and some juice over there. And there's bread and juice over here. The juice is apple black currant, so don't expect grape. We have some grape allergies, and so we honour the people in our church by changing that up. We don't hold really strictly to exactly what is used and how it's used. Because the idea is that it is a symbol. And so we take the bread, and the bread is the symbol of Jesus' body. And his body was broken for you, that you may be redeemed, that you may be restored. And his blood was shed for you, that you may have a hope for a better future. And so please take the bread in your own time. Take the cup back with you to your seat and hold it, because we will drink together. All right, there'll be a few moments, so there's no rush, so don't feel like you have to race up there, because part of what we're meant to do with communion is take stock of our own spiritual life at the moment. Where are we high? Where are we low? What is hindering us? Do we need to actually come to the altar and actually repent of something? Is there something that is racking us at this time that we need to let go? And so I encourage you, before you come forward, take a moment. Anything you need to bring before God in prayer. And then when you're ready, we invite anyone who's decided to make Jesus their Lord and Savior to come forward, grab the bread, hold the cup, go back to your seat.